Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
When the credits start rolling, but the movie keeps haunting you.
Before, after.
Then it's time to tune in to Dismembering Horror. We'll talk about what worked and also what didn't. We'll dissect every aspect. Maybe some of us shouldn't.
He turned out to be a completely unreliable asshole.
Take it away, boys.
Hey, Tim.
Hello, Ryan.
Good to be back here with you.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And with all you...
Back again.
Yes, back in the car again. And also good to be here with all you listening, watching. Perhaps this is Dismembering Horror, as our wonderful introduction friend person just said. But specifically what she did not say, this is episode 205. And we will be dismembering Torso, which has the Italian title, I Corpi Presentano Tracce di Violenza Carnale, which literally translates to The Bodies Bear Traces of Carnal Violence.
Oh, okay.
Well, anything else?
That's exciting.
It is. Anything else to say that's exciting before we jump in with our trailer here? Anything from our previous films you wanted to
Oh, I don't know.
Correct yourself on anything?
Never. No, I don't have anything exciting.
Great.
Just living life, you know?
Living life. All right.
Yeah.
And now we're here living life talking about horror.
That's true.
All right. So to dismember Torso. That seems apt. To dismember Torso. Let's watch the trailer.
An already dismembered torso.
Yes.
I'm going to dismember it more. Okay, let's watch the trailer.
All right.
Now, from Cavalcanti, the man who brought you Dr. Zhivago, comes a totally new motion picture experience. A journey into the bizarre, terrifying world of the psychosexual mind. Torso, it saturates the screen with terror.
I've called you here today for a good reason. What do you have here? A fragments of...
Is one of these students a psychosexual killer?
...murdered just 1 week ago.
Or are they just playing erotic games? Not so innocent erotic games.
Okay. Yeah. There was the trailer. So, Tim, next we like to rate our films per our rating system, us talking to ourselves who haven't seen the film yet. What do we tell ourselves to avoid, stream, rent, or buy this film? This, we haven't said the word yet, Tim. This giallo.
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 I think it's, I don't know. I thought it was okay. I didn't love it. It was a little over the top in the, just the exploitation sense of it, like, let's show a lot of boobs. I don't know. The story is so non-existent that, like, although it is very similar to, you know, sort of the other giallo in the who's the killer sense, I just wasn't that into it. So I'd say you stream it.
Got it. I feel like I gotta say the exact things as you, but give a different rating, which was the exploitation was over the top. It had a non-existent story, nothing yeah, bogging it down.
True.
So I gotta give it a rent.
Okay.
Which, for context, too, like, Tim and I were...
Don't you tend to not like the giallo?
That's what I was just going to say.
Yeah, okay.
I mean, maybe I was speaking for both of us right there, but we've historically have not been crazy about the giallos, except for opera.
Opera, like, I liked, yeah.
Reign Supreme. And now in my memory, even though it was a slog, I love Phenomena.
Yeah.
Just the weirdness of it all.
Yeah, I can't. I still have a hard time with Phenomena.
I mean, the monkey
it's okay.
kill at the end.
It's so absurd.
Maybe that's
why, yeah.
That's why I love
it. I do remember going on quite a rant about the monkey adventure and just being crazy.
The killer at the end of that one, how they look.
I don't even remember
the killer. It's like a monster-faced freak boy.
Okay. Yeah, the ends of these movies tend to be the thing I remember the least.
Yeah. Well, anyway, this one, maybe it was two. I don't know. I'd say is third for me now, but it didn't get so slogged down and what usually slogs them down for me. I don't know. We'll get into it more in the what worked. But also maybe coming off of Evil Dead Rise, which I acknowledge I give a stream to, and I'm giving a rent to this. This movie
wow.
had that... disturbing bite that made me feel I was like oh. looking at something I shouldn't be allowed to look at, which was what the kind of thing I would be hoping for from an Evil Dead reboot.
That's an interesting distinction. That I think clarifies some of what we were talking about last time.
Mm-hmm.
You want to see something that feels like you shouldn't be watching it.
Remember, I was trying to put it in like when the feeling when you're a kid watching an R-rated
totally.
Movie, and there's just, oh, there's just something here that's quote unquote
yeah.
adult that like I get why my parents would be apt to show
sure.
this for me. That's not just a blood and boobs thing, but.
Huh. Yeah. Okay. I mean, I guess I can. I think that's an interesting way to look at it.
Yeah. It felt nasty to me.
It was kind of nasty.
But and that affected me in that way
right.
that you say even more than me, you want to feel.
God, I'd have to think about like historically what movies as a kid really made me feel that way. I don't know. Let me think about it while we talk.
Okay.
Maybe I'll come up with one.
Great. I'll instill your love of horror though, I'm sure.
Totally.
Okay. Our ratings. Well, you said stream?
Yeah.
All right. I said rent. So let's kind of get on the same page here.
God.
Give it a summary.
Summary of these movies is challenging, I think, at times. I think the simplest, because there's like no story, but there sort of is a story.
Yeah.
Like we get so many scenes that have nothing to do with anything except that somebody's getting killed.
College, art. History, co-eds.
Yeah. An American in, where are we? Italy.
Italy.
Presumably, right?
Yes. Which, what version did you watch? Because when I hit play on my iTunes, it played it in Italian.
I watched.
But then when I played it a second time, it started playing an English dub, which actually matched their mouths.
Oh.
So I'm like, I should have just, I don't know.
I definitely watched a non-dubbed version, a subtitled version.
Okay, Italian.
Yeah.
Okay, so Italy, co-eds, and they, amongst their midst, their friends start getting killed off.
Correct. So it's Scream.
Yeah. And we have the years ago kind of setup story or whatever.
Oh. Yeah, wait, what was that?
It's like the doll with the eyes.
On the side of a mountain or
something.
Yeah,
and then falling off the cliff.
Somebody falls off a cliff.
And so is the seeds of our killer here.
Right.
The psychosexual seeds.
Right. So, yeah. So you got the American girl and you've got her friends, her Italian friends, classmates, and they go off to a small mountain town.
To get away from it all.
Yeah,
I forget their
vacay.
Exact reasoning. I guess it's, is it coincidentally that they're doing it when these murders are happening? Or are they doing it to get away?
Oh,
or is it like her aunt's house or
it's
something?
It's somebody's, relative's house, I feel like. And then, so it's at the top of a mountain, basically, yeah. Which is kind of cool. You know, one of these little, like, European Alps towns. And the town folk are a bunch of dudes who seem like they've never seen a young woman before. Mm-hmm. So they're all about it. So
yeah, they're all suspects.
Yeah, every man essentially is a suspect. There's a sort of boyfriend-ish like guy who's been trying to date one of them.
Oh yeah.
And he's in their class, their art class, and he's a creep. I mean, they give him a lot of like, please get away from me, you creep vibe. So he's a suspect. There's a whole storyline with a scarf, because there's a vendor in the town square that sells these scarves, and somebody saw the scarf.
Confusion if it's like a red patterns on black scarf or black patterns on red scarf.
Yeah.
No, it's basically they go and then they get killed off.
There's a detective too, right? Sort of. I don't even remember. Yeah, there's a doctor, mm-hmm. The town doctor. He gets involved. He's into the American girl. It's pretty vague. A lot of hippie sort of like free love scenes that all kind of start with like some sexual, you know, inclination that unravels and turns south, and then the killer shows up and kills one of them. That's kind of it. I mean, there's a really, there is a motive, right? Yeah, there's a motive. Spoiler alert, the killer is the art professor that we meet twice.
He's lecturing at the beginning, yeah.
And then they go on a date, him and the American. He was traumatized as a kid because his sister, help me understand / remember when we find out that the killer is this professor guy and he's got this psychosexual trauma or whatever, he was on the side of a mountain with his sister?
I think so, yeah.
That seems right. And there's a tug of war over the doll or something, and then she goes flying or he goes flying or somebody else goes flying off the cliff. It's her.
I think she.
And then so the idea, I'm gonna assume the idea is that in watching her death, he imprinted what he turned away to look at, which is the doll being smashed against the rocks, and is now become obsessed with recreating that in some sort of perverse way.
Or he says something like,
he looks at women as dolls, yeah. and that they need to be destroyed or something like that.
Yeah.
So the trauma made him have a psychotic break, and now he has this idea about women.
Yes.
But he can live a totally normal life as an art professor as well.
It's just the best. I love when the killers are these sort of like
innocuous,
dork, very normal presenting whoever's. Well, like,
I mean, sadly, that is in real life,
yeah,
very common.
Or like, I mean, it was another movie I just watched when it's like they're the, or it was the opera, I think, was this way, where it's like they're the strong-jawed, handsome one.
Right, right.
Who are like, oh, well, we want to trust them.
Yeah, he's the hero. He couldn't be the killer.
Yeah, those are the best. But this guy's good, too.
Yeah, I mean, you see him for, like I said, like 30 seconds of screen time before the end.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
That's kind of it. All right. That's.
Yeah, I mean, how does it end? She gets away?
I mean, I already mentioned it. Then they go, then they're at the thing for, they're at the chateau for half the movie, two thirds of the movie. And then, yeah, get killed off until we have the final girl situation.
Right. Standard.
Yeah. All right. Well, I think we're here to talk about what worked for us for it.
Sounds like a plan.
Let's do it. What worked?
What worked for you? What worked for you.
Work like a charm,
Smith.
What worked for you?
Yeah, like I guess what I already said, the biggest thing kind of holding me back from giallo typically is just feeling slogged down from like the procedural scenes, the like the detective who's just talking to different people in different offices,
right?
Whatever. Like, I don't know. It just didn't have any of that. Maybe it was like closer to the 90 minute range. So that helped too.
That's true.
But just all I realize like the bits and bobs is what giallo is all about. It's like the color. It's the yeah. mood, the vibe, all that jazz. And this just had it going on for it so well. Like,
yes,
the women, the locations, the murderer, it's himself with the mask and all that.
That's a good look and a good vibe.
I mean, just so much, yeah, great mood pieces, even when it was just like them walking around these like Italian cities, just looking gorgeous, up and down cool looking steps. Just they all had interesting looking apartments.
I love there's two scenes that just feel really cool to me. The parked car makeout scene that's like under a bridge or something that. It's very like, you know, surrounded in this like megalithic looking cement structure, whatever that is. And there's like rubble around and stuff. Like just the look of that scene with like the headlights hitting that stuff and the sneaking about aspect of it. I like that. And then I also like, of course, the two car scenes basically are the ones I like. The other one that's at like a little, I don't know what you would call it. It's an old kind of ranch style, stable-y kind of
looking. You mean where they're having the party?
No, where the dude gets pinned against the wall.
Oh, right.
I don't know what you call that. It's like a little villa. No, it's not a villa. It's a little stable
right.
kind of looking jam. I don't know. But just the look of those environments I really, really like.
I mean, you mentioning that scene, just to sort of then, I guess, talk about the kill scenes here. That one was great. The car kill.
I will say this is fairly true to form for giallo. The only moments that I really perked up were like the splash moment of the kills.
Mm-hmm.
Everything else, I was sort of like, okay, here we go. Like it. Nothing felt overtly interesting or unique to me, except for maybe the swamp. The swamp was pretty cool.
Yeah,
but also like, suddenly we're in a swamp.
Well, just kind of to touch on these kills coming to mind. Yes, the car, the guy with the car smush, who's kind of set up as one of our like weird suspect guys. Yeah. So it's kind of fun when, you know, we get that inverted and him killed. But that one too, that was maybe the moment where it was like, when I think there's like a close up of his head getting smushed and it's so like fake and obvious it's fake. But just that's just one example of all of them in this film where it's like, even though it looks fake, there's something like, I don't know, there's something gross and tangible and just in a dream.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's an actual physical thing,
but even,
like a prop that's getting smashed or cut or whatever. And like, yeah, I think this is an interesting reality to, I guess, just filmmaking in general. It almost doesn't, it matters if your film is trying to be hyper-realistic.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, it matters that realism is consistent through that. But like, if you're doing any sort of stylized filmmaking, your kills and your gore and effects can be completely like absurd. And for some reason, it's still visceral and still has the right effect.
I mean, I always want to like giallo more than I tend to do, or like get it or whatever. I think we brought up I've brought up at some point on a last drive-in with Joe Bob Briggs. We had Eli Roth on one episode to do some giallo films. Like, I think one of them was like house at the cemetery,
Well-versed.
Yes, he explained it in a way that, you know, was just a great sell for watching Giallos. And I remember it, the gist of it was very much tuning into like the dream logic, dream feel, dream flow.
Totally.
And all that. And that's where I think it's interesting to look at the lens of the violence from. It's like not real, like we were saying, but it's imbibed with that darkness and that R-rated ookiness I'm talking about.
Totally. Go listen to him and Tarantino on Tarantino and Stephen Avery's podcast.
Oh, yeah.
They do American Giallo. I think they do like a two-part episode.
There's another one. You and I didn't like Alice Doesn't Live Here Anymore.
He loved it.
Right?
Right? Like they talk about that. And like, so yeah, he's really interesting and gives, like you're saying, a good kind of other way of looking at these movies that maybe takes the edge off of what we dislike.
Mm-hmm.
Like, don't go in expecting it to be, you know, a David Fincher movie or something.
No.
Like, it's not that. The over-the-top nature of the visuals, I think is, and that this is consistent with all Giallo, I think that's what makes it in its category, is what you should be focusing on. And, you know, to varying degrees, whether or not the lack of a story matters.
See, that's the one that's what was working so well with this one. It seemed to like finally not actually matter, where the other ones, it feels like I'm supposed to be being able to like follow the detective side of it more.
Yeah, like the mystery is an important part of it. In this one, it's not. It's just that there's a killer on the loose, which, you know, like same with, I don't know, Halloween, like. It doesn't really matter that we find out who Michael Myers is and why he's doing it. It just doesn't really matter.
It's closer to what works about just the slasher formula than other giallos.
And I'm like, I'm fine with getting a reveal, but it doesn't matter to me that is who the killer was.
It's just part of like the little fun. Okay, cool. Like, yeah.
But I love that we get this fairly long sequence or series of sequences in the house.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's where the movie really starts to take off for me. It's like we've got a bunch of other scenes of like individual kills that are in their own sort of little land, like whatever area they happen to have chosen to shoot in, like the farmhouse sex scene party, like whatever, and the field and the swamp and the ranch or whatever. But once we're in the house, like the chateau, feels more like a home invasion movie, which I think became really fun. And like the whole, once the killer's in the house and has killed a couple of, well, or how many people does he kill? All three women and one guy?
Yeah.
I think that's right. And like, there's the whole thing with like her shoe on the stairs.
Right.
Her getting locked in the room. I love that. I love a, like, I'm trapped in here and I need to figure out how to get out.
Oh, that moment was so good when he puts the key down there for her.
Amazing.
Yeah, that was great.
So that stuff, like, amazing, perfect, like, little set pieces. Or even just moments.
Well, I agree.
Her hiding.
I agree. I loved all the stuff in the house. Them sunbathing included, the weird milkman showing up, all that stuff.
Yeah.
The like that there's like the lesbian aspect to it too was great. Just so felt like so beautifully of the time in a way. I loved all of them. They were great.
Yeah, yeah.
But I don't
go on.
I didn't want to totally gloss over, though, like the stuff before the house.
Totally.
Like,
no, I'm overexcited about the house.
Okay. Cause no, yeah, I don't know. Okay. Cause it sounded like you're kind of saying, oh, yeah, those earlier things. But I really want to highlight those like first kill scenes where the one where, it's the first one where he like holds her under in the sort of shallow swamp water. Just like, that is where I was talking about. It just like felt so just mean and like gruesome. And like the way he was holding her under and the way that like after, I mean, she's dead and all his future victims, the way it's, he kind of like messes with the body and then pokes the eye holes. It's like, even when they're dead, that's kind of then when the psychosexual side comes out. And that was just, it just got to me. It was
now,
really good.
I don't remember. Are we supposed to, is it implied or even explicitly said that he's raping the bodies after they're dead?
I think it was.
Or is that, or am I just imagining that?
I think it's a safe implication, but I forget if there's any moments where it's like we see him explicitly leaving before that would happen. I don't know.
Ah, right. Interesting.
So maybe there is room for that.
Because like if he's not doing that, then what's sexual about his kills? And they're like explicitly saying he's psychosexual.
I mean, there's a non-penetrative molestation.
Okay. Sure.
Which we definitely see.
Yeah. Yeah, there's so many boobs
or
in this
penetrative
movie.
As far as eye holes, too.
True.
Because he's flashing back. It's, it's all with the dolls and the poking the eyes in. But so that, I mean, that first scene was just like, ugh. And then just again, like combined with how his mask looks and like the gloves that he's wearing, it was all ookie dookie. And then sort of similarly, too, the field swamp that like after after this great party scene, which just,
I was like, this is where Ryan wants to live his whole life in this weird barn with a bunch of dudes smoking weed and playing, you know, acoustic guitars.
That song, right? It was like an old mill or barn or factory or something like that.
Yeah, mill. It feels like that. That's totally
the right word for it. But the one woman, she's like, you gotta leave me alone. I'm over you guys.
I love that scene too, because it's, I feel like it's a very accurate depiction through the eyes of a woman, not being one, but from what my friends of mine have said, I would categorize this as horror for sure. A lot of women, I think, feel, I'm not speaking for women, I'm speaking to what women have said to me. So I'm not like assuming I know what they're feeling. I'm reiterating what I've been told, that there are often times when the vibe of a situation is fine and they're engaged and feeling it, and then that changes for them. It doesn't matter why, right? Like, it just does. But a lot of it can have to do with the idea of expectation, that after a certain threshold, sort of a vague threshold, suddenly men often portray an expectation of, well, we've gotten to here, therefore we have to get to sex.
I mean, it's the classic moment of like they're making out, and then as soon as he goes to unbutton her pants or shirt or whatever, then it changes. And that's what happens in this scene.
Exactly. Yeah. And so I was like, oh, this is, you know, 73 and we're very accurately depicting a thing that I've been told in 23.
I love how she says, you take off your clothes first, and then she just puts her cigarette out on him and gets out of there.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and how quickly they turn on her, right? Like that.
More suspects.
Exactly. But I'm like, that's a very common experience that I've been told about from women.
Well, since kind of on the topic, kind of bouncing around here a lot, but that I think as an overall what worked for me too is kind of like the Carnival of Souls-esque just presence of man as an oppressive force, and just all the men are the killer in a way.
Exactly.
And it really like, I mean, it's just kind of what you want from a giallo slasher movie, because so much of it is about, I think it's this like there's this masculine tinged instinct of kind of the murder, you know,
right.
a visceral knife on body or strangle murder.
Yep.
That just when coupled with the context of all these leering men are a suspect, it just, yeah, adds that other dimension to it that you just absolutely want and feels key.
Well, and I think that kind of what we're getting at is, or realizing maybe, is that this is a very, a deeper depiction of what a lot of women, how they experience the world, right? It's a maybe magnified or not, honestly, that they can walk into a town and every dude in the town is leering at them. That's not like an overstatement.
It's like in the White Lotus season 2. Did you see that yet?
I haven't watched season 2 yet.
Seen it, you know what I'm talking about. Aubrey Plaza when she goes to town. Okay, so I mean, unless there's more on that, still on the old mill party, which then switches into, yes, I was just saying that kill scene is great too, where it so much of the time and with Giallo too, especially when there's the day, I always forget that order, shooting night for day, shooting day,
day for night.
Shooting day, shooting day for day. Yes. Shooting night to look like the day. It'd be night for day. It takes place at night, but it looks like they shot during the day.
Yeah, so it's day for night.
Okay.
All of Nope was, well, not all of it, but a lot of Nope was shot day for night, if you can believe it.
Shooting day for looking like night.
Correct.
Come on, TV.
Usually that doesn't look great, but this here, it had this, like, it felt like we were trapped in this sort of, like, twilight period. It didn't feel like night or that sort of day for night I'm talking about, but yeah, when she escapes from the mill barn party,
totally, it's
gets
creepy.
Killed in there, it's super foggy, like
high contrast,
yeah,
like
the shots from
shadowy,
the killer from afar in the silhouette more or less, just all that was great stuff. I thought
yeah, it's interesting, like as much as I didn't like wait, should I say this now? No, I shouldn't. I will say, in spite of things that I don't like about it, which we can discuss, there is a pretty cool visual vibe, without question.
Right.
Even though I'll just stop there.
Well, then any other examples of that for you?
I love the I love when she's trapped in the chateau up on the top of the mountain and she's trying to like use a mirror to get the attention of somebody down there, and just the way that looks, like it's so 70s and like these hard zooms from like the down in the town all the way up or vice versa or whatever. Like it's stuff like that. So I guess more of what I'm maybe is appealing to me is just the actual style of filming that existed at that time. Like I, for some reason, just enjoy that look and style. And I love it when modern filmmakers like replicate it or homage it if they do it well. But like Panos, I feel like has a eye for that. Tarantino obviously does.
Oh yeah.
I'm sure there are others. Nick Reffin.
Well, like we always say too, when it's the OG though, there's something special.
That's
about
right.
It.
Because it is what it is.
Mm-hmm.
Purely, like it was created that way. For whatever reason.
Yeah.
With those machines.
Right. Like how a woman walking down an alley hearing noises is never going to top cat and cat people.
Yeah.
The scene.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, so much just building that atmosphere and mood, whether it's like when she gets the one apartment, like the parrot, like scares us and her, just like the fact that there's the parrot there. Love that.
I like the car mechanic.
Right. So all these little like side characters too, that keep it interesting, that I feel like isn't always a given. I don't know, and a lot of characters too. So it is this colorful cast of characters.
True. Did you feel like, so I have a question like about, like we've seen a lot of movies of this general era. So I'm going to make a big bracket here, like between 55 and maybe 80, somewhere in there. That's a lot of time. But we've seen a lot of movies that are kind of in this vein where it's like there's either a town full of crazy people or a town full of weird people and you don't know who's actually crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And I keep wondering to myself, like, two things. One, is that an accurate depiction of like small town Whereversville? Like, is it accurate or is it a magnification to the time and the area or whatever, right? Like, so if we stepped into 1972 Italy in that town, would we be like, oh yeah, that's just what this is? Or are they taking sort of details like or like cliches of the time and just totally blowing it out and magnifying it and saying everybody, you know, like, oh, just go over the top with it? So that's the first question. The second question is, what's the modern equivalent of that? And do we have, like, have we seen that?
Yes, I think that's interesting. I think maybe why that... Maybe I hope I'm getting your question right, but what comes to mind is I feel like that specific time period sort of at least represents when, before we had the interconnectedness of cell phones, internet era,
okay,
even just phone, yeah, I don't know, predominantly stuff like that, there was more of an ingrown like suspicion and sort of pulling through that small town. You know,
yeah,
like Tourist Trap, you know, that sort of film, and where you didn't have the safety of sort of like, oh yeah, let me Google this town, or oh, let me just call for help, you know, there's, or you know, the pulling over to stay at the Bates Motel, like to go back to, I think you said 55, you know,
right,
Psycho's 1960, so that feels to me like there's a sort of association with that time, just the pre 90s. You know, onslaught of our connected era. Modern, I've seen that, I feel like.
So do you think it's accurate?
What?
Or a magnification?
Oh, that suspicion?
That, yeah, the depiction of how people in those spaces are.
I mean, how do you answer that?
I don't know. I'm just, what's your feel? Like,
I feel,
would you say that if...
I feel like to technically answer that, you have to look at statistics of how many kind of horrible murder things happen and how many horror movies there are.
Forget about the murder aspect. I'm just talking about people being weird.
Oh yeah, everyone's weird.
Right. That's what I think.
Yeah.
But are they magnifying that inherent weirdness?
Got it. So,
or
yeah,
are they?
I see what you're latching.
Accurately depicting the actual weirdness. That
right.
Exists.
I see what you're latching onto. I feel like there's definitely something that's accentuated with like the going through the small town, where it's like we all have our weird self inner lives behind closed doors, and then like the presenting outside. And there's just something where you feel like that. Maybe it's because the line is almost like hardened if you're like going through and there's the weird gas station attendant, that the sort of jump to it being weird is that much more like suspect, or you feel hyper aware of suspicious right. of. Does that right. make any
yeah.
sense?
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
So I think the movies tend to focus on that.
Mm-hmm.
It exists in real life, but probably not as intensely or as overtly as they're depicting it.
How do we get on this? Because this is not okay, in Torso. Torso's a big town.
Well, no, the little chateau town
has
that thing.
Okay.
And I think going from the big town to the little town.
Well, it's all the same. It's the same big city. It's just up on.
No, it's not. It's not.
Oh, right.
They're in like Rome or some shit.
Yeah.
To begin with. And then they travel out. Because remember, she says it took her like 4 hours or something to drive there. It's a long drive. So it is like, this is, you know, the country.
Yeah. No, and
countryside,
as
whatever.
Just, I mean, because you asked too, I was just trying to think modern examples. I can think of the House of Wax remake, which just kind of
that's feels, 30 years ago.
No, that came out when I was in college.
Okay, 20 years ago.
Like 15, maybe. No, 2000, part of the aughts era.
Sure.
The early reboot.
I think we have to say that's no longer modern.
But it's
an example
of what I'm talking about when it's that connected world where I think you can view it through there's a differentiation between like, oh, they're just trying to awkwardly deal with cell phones in the film versus like, but you still can like have, maybe you have your cake and eat it too with the like small town you're going through. And then there's, I thought of two actually when thinking of this film and that kind of setting and mood and everything. God, what's it called? The Something of Water, the Gore Verbinski movie with our girl Mia Goth in it.
Oh God,
I really like that. I'd love to talk about it.
Seen? Oh, what is that called?
The Something of Water,
The Way of Water.
No, that's not an Avatar
that's
movie.
Avatar. The Shape of Water. No, that's
The Shape of Water. Anyway.
I'll find
That's a really good movie. I remember, if I remember correctly, and I'd love to revisit it, especially since I can't remember its name. We should dismember it. But that had a fun, like, yeah, something's off in the small town. I mean, Calvaire.
Oh, but Calvaire is, when did that come
out? Well, so when I'm thinking of this.
But Calvaire possesses this 100%.
Right. What's interesting when I think it's, you know, Calvaire and then this water movie, can't remember the name of.
I'll get it.
It can still be done when it's like you're way out in the boonies. It's less that feel of like you're on vacation and just passing through a whatever town, and more like, you know, I don't know. You see what I'm saying? Where it's like in order to capture that still, we just have to go further out. If that makes sense. That's the sense I get.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
We have to get even more like physically, literally disconnected somehow.
The Cure for Wellness.
That was it.
Yeah.
Why is it a water?
Cure for Wellness. There's like a water bottle on the poster.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay. Yes. Okay. I feel like that's a sufficient answer to those two questions. Sure.
Good.
I'd like to see more of that, honestly. If we can bridge the gap between modern time and the feeling of like, Children of the Corn, or, you know, what else? 10,000 Maniacs. Like, can we? I honestly feel like it exists currently in our country.
Was it 200? 2,000?
Whatever it was. 10,000 Maniacs.
I don't think it was 10,000.
The band. Yeah, 2,000 Maniacs, yeah. Whatever that movie that we saw was.
Yeah, it was great.
Like, I think that this vibe exists in the U.S. for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Still,
I think
I've driven across the country a number of times, and it's out there.
I think you should make it.
I will.
All right, I'll hold you to
it. I'm into it. Okay,
torso.
Yeah, that's what we're talking about.
I mean, I pretty much said most of it though. Like, it's just all the bits of little color from the hippie party to. The houses, the apartments, to the killer's mask, to the nudity.
The cars.
Yeah, man. It's all good stuff.
Mm.
Just another example of like the sort of like, even as fake as it all is, it has the moments of just where it feels kind of chilling. Like when she spies him in the chateau sawing at the body. It's just like...
Something about that
just felt like real and just like there was no music heightening it or anything. It's just like,
Yeah. Yeah. I almost feel like we don't see that enough. Not enough, but like we don't see the really raw, visceral, like just stark, plain version of that all that often. There's a reason because it's insanely terrifying.
Mm-hmm.
But like, come on, like let's do that.
Just see the act in its simple simplicity.
I don't even
need very horrifying in itself.
The actual cutting.
Yeah.
Like the image of watching somebody obscured from maybe over their shoulder or whatever going, well, and hearing the sound
it was so controlled and deliberate and not non-hurried, I think is what got to me about it. Just like casual almost.
That's a really smart component to making a killer more terrifying. There's like having them have a no rush.
Yes, that is a way to do it.
That's a really effective way to make a killer scary.
Yeah, very in control.
Anyway,
because they're out of control.
That's right.
Yeah, man, I was into it for, you know, I was suspect of Giallos, but this one right now I'm ranking third and just makes the cut of like some of the other ones we've watched were of liking it.
Fair.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's move on.
All right. What did not work?
It's not ready yet.
Seems to work okay.
No, something important's missing.
What did not work?
This is a weird thing to say because it's almost like, yeah, that it's a part of Giallo films, it seems. But I was so bored with it.
Well, that's where I said this. It's wrong that it's a given, or it's not wrong. It's sad. It can be a given,
right,
for Giallo for us. But this was surprisingly not that way for me. It felt like
it moved
at a good clip. Again, there's enough characters, settings, interesting stuff going on. It wasn't just this like one dude going around talking to this person, talking to this person.
So when you watched the initial dubbed version and then subsequently the
just bits and pieces of the English version,
do you think you enjoyed it more that because it was, well, I don't know how you would.
This is my question for things of note.
Okay. All right. Well, so I wonder if I would have enjoyed it more if I'd watched the dubbed version.
So, but basically though,
I watched it late too, which is always like, be good and can be dangerous. If I'm just starting to feel a little tired and it's late enough, I might lose the, I'm up watching a movie late at night, like, you know, tingle. And I think that happened to this with this one. But it may also just be the combination of that with it being a giallo and just the style of this sort of like, it's very up and down.
Mm-hmm.
So the pacing wasn't bad, but for some reason I still felt bored and tired.
Yeah.
And then a kill would happen. I'd be like, oh yeah, here we go.
Yeah.
Great. Cool. And then it would slog back down and I'd be like, oh damn it.
It's funny, like my level of engagement with these movies, it's just since it's like totally out of the possibility for me to like actually follow like the mystery if there's any of that. Well, I'm talking about for all Giallo films. For this, the big challenge is like learning who's who and trying to remember their names. This is the girl with the eyes. Okay, she's the one. Okay. That one's Danny, and that guy was Franz. Oh yeah, and Katia, they said that name was her. Like that's enough. That's about the mystery level that I can handle. Is just figuring out who.
Yeah.
And so that was the good amount for me to be able to latch onto it. Something in that way, rather than like tune out because it's too much information.
right. It's so not confusing that it's almost confusing.
Yeah. Was it Deep Red is the one I think I keep having in my mind's eye. That's the one with the peep looking through the peephole, right?
Oh, God, I don't remember.
It was the other Italy set one.
All I think of when I think of Deep Red is the doll in the beginning, or the kid, the little kid in the beginning.
Right.
And the town square.
Yeah.
It's so cool looking, and somebody gets like killed in a window or something.
But
I remember
both of us just weren't into the protagonist, and that's what I'm talking about whenever I'm saying it's just this dude just sort of going from room to room.
That's true. I mean, in the same way though, what I don't like about this is that it's just a dude going from room to room killing people. And I understand
that's what we're here for.
Let me be more specific.
Okay.
It's the just going from room to room aspect of it that bugs me, because like it's so indiscriminate that I can get behind that, but then the movie tells us that there's a reason he's doing it. So it's like a conflict in that it seems like the story is that this crazy dude has a thing for this particular girl, and he's on his way to get to her, like to kill her specifically. I'm okay with that. But then we have all these scenes where it's totally random, right? Like, I don't think that unless the attempt was to say that he's specifically killing off her friends, for what though? To torture her? You know what I mean? Like, it's not enough. Like, it's doing two things. It's trying to be specific and random at the same time. And I think that just annoyed me.
So, yeah, when you have someone whose like whole thing has something to do with poking the eyes out of dolls, for me it just completely enters the terrain of this is so beyond like the realm of so crazy it's beyond the realm of understanding, like clear motives, actions.
No, but that's my point. Yeah. Is there is no clear motive until we get to the final girl.
He's crazy. He's psychosexual.
But why is she but I don't know. Then why did they date? Like, why'd they go on a date?
Mm-hmm.
I think that's what's annoying to me. Either be totally random, and I'm down for that. He's going out of convenience to the next person who he can get to because they're all in his class.
Right.
Which is a little stupid on his part, let's be honest. Like, if you're going to kill a bunch of women, maybe don't do it all of the women in your class
maybe
at
that's
your school.
Part of his reason, his motivation.
I understand that, but
lust.
It's a very good way to get caught. So it's either that, be random about it,
right,
or have a motive to make the object of your affection, it perverse as it may be, have a reason why he's picking off all her friends.
I feel like
one or the other. I don't like both. That's all I'm saying.
I think I just can't enter the territory of either. I can neither agree or defend with that, agree or argue with that, just because I feel like I'd have to see it again. Like, I feel like I didn't catch half the dialogue that you could sort of get this from.
Well, since we don't see him
mm-hmm.
except for two scenes, I don't think there's enough in there to glean one way or the other. But, I mean, he goes to the chateau. Like,
but,
he follows them.
He says stuff
to
at
this
the
town.
End and explaining it. I don't know.
I guess.
I feel like it could be
when
there.
When he's going, like, sure.
I don't know. I'm
crazy.
Yeah. I'm not sure exactly what I would have wanted that
I'm not,
to be out of it.
I just one or the other. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah. I can't recall if
you
it was one way or the other.
Be bothered to care.
I really don't.
Typical giallo.
Yeah.
You know, like the result of that. So, yeah. But to me, that's, I think that some people, that's what's endearing to them about giallo.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it seems like for us, maybe in slightly different ways, it is a like a barrier of entry.
I feel like I just got it where I'm again, maybe I feel like there's stuff in there that if I had seen it twice or watched it, the English dub, whatever, I could have been, oh no, well, Tim, it was this and this because of this. But the experience of just watching it a first time through it in Italian, missing half the dialogue, probably it was just like, there's this crazy, creepy force that is kind of just indeterminate dude. Just like,
Sure.
Killer, very scary killer. And who is he going to get next? And what is he going for? And is, I don't know. Yeah. It worked for me
I
in that sort of
scary.
I'm
overthinking it a little bit, given what it is.
You know, if you apply, if you want to get the spirit of viewing it like a dream, I don't think one would.
Yeah.
Like when watching a dream, you aren't going, wait, hold
but
on.
But do we think the same thing about like Friday the 13th? Not really, but it's the same gist. But he's so indiscriminate about it.
Mm-hmm.
Then I'm like, okay,
mm-hmm.
I'm in. If they were to be like, but he also like had a thing for this particular girl mm-hmm. because of this or that or whatever, I'd be like, Jason doesn't give a shit about that.
I don't know, man. I'd just see it again. Be like, one
okay,
way or
fair
the
enough.
Other.
What else did you not like?
I liked it all, man. I don't know. It's not a buy for me as of now, but yeah. So I don't know if it's holding it back other than just it's not my new favorite move or anything, but what it was, I thought it was good.
Yeah. It's yeah. interesting because I can't say that I didn't really hate anything.
I mean, the only things that would come to mind for this movie are not true. I'd say there could have been more violence or more nudity, but I got both of those. I was not disappointed.
I'll counterpoint this in that I think the gratuitous nudity is just unnecessary.
Well, if you call it, you just said, I think the unnecessary nudity is unnecessary. What?
I think that the amount of nudity that is specifically aimed at achieving this like exploitation vibe. Meh. I don't need to see that many boobs. I love boobs, but like it felt ridiculous to me that every scene girls are wandering around with their shirts off. Like as just like okay, it bordered on totally absurd.
I like absurd, I guess.
No, you like boobs, which well, is fine. Like, I'm fine with it, but like back away from the appeal of that and look at it from like a filmmaking standpoint, I'm just like, it's just eye-rolly right. to me. I'm like, if you or I set out to make a movie and we're like, okay, next scene, shirts off again,
but
the cast would be like, oh my God.
Right.
The crew would be like, yeah, baby.
But again, it's not us. It's a different, it's like, I don't know. The movie, first of all, anyone should know what they're signing up for when
agreed
doing a movie. So maybe that's.
Yeah. Don't be that director. That's right. Like, oh, by the way.
Yeah. But the movie seemed kind of like aware of it in the fun way where it's like they're out sunbathing and then you have the guy arrive to deliver food and he's like, gets all besides himself and they're, oh, hi, breakfast is here. Okay. There was just something like funny in that,
I agree
that like Russ Meyer kind of
yeah,
way.
It's
you know?
Funny and it's over the top, but it's just, I don't know. I had a thought about it, but whatever. Oh, okay, typically I'd be like, yeah, no problem, Europe, totally different take on nudity, in particular, boobs. You know, like when I was a little kid, we went to, where were we? We went to Europe when I was like 10 or something like that, or 9. And we went to like a park with a water slide, you know, like a fun little water, not a water park, but it had a cool water slide or a couple of them, you know, and we show up, you know, like it's a beach day kind of vibe and it's summer and every woman there was topless. And my 9-year-old American dumb brain could not I was like, how is this allowed? Right. Like in my mind, that's, you know, our stupid puritanical, like conservative
See,
sort
so
of
R-rated.
Like cover it up. Like I was flabbergasted as a kid, but like, you know, then I'm like, look at my mom. My mom is like, listen, calm down. This is normal here.
Yeah.
That's just the way they do it. Not a big deal. Call, like take it down a notch. Like, you know, unwiden your eyes, dude.
See, that's the voice I heard that this movie was saying. Yo, come down. This is normal here. This is fine.
Okay, so if that's true, though, nobody in the movie would be going, oh.
No, not in the country they are. The movie, in this movie, it's okay here. It's fine.
Okay. I get it. But I still think if I'm going to, just as a counterpoint to your
I feel
okayness
like,
with
right.
it, I am okay with it too. But I can see how maybe it could not. It was so much that it didn't work for me exactly.
Cool. I feel like it's all just your way of saying I'm slightly less perverted than Ryan here. I'm willing to concede that.
I'm not. But when it comes to making the movie, I'm being a little what would be the right term? I'm being a little snobby.
See,
I want my boobs to be artistically done.
Okay, which I would say this is. I don't know. It's slasher movie.
Exactly.
Which could bridge us to things of note if you're ready.
Man, I'm so ready after that conversation about boobs.
Here we go. Things of note.
Things of note!
This should be interesting.
I thought this was very interesting. According to a Paste magazine article from 2020 by Jim Vorell.
Okay.
Called What Truly Was the First Slasher Film? A Paste Investigation. It was this film, Torso.
Hmm.
He runs through all the proto slashers.
Okay.
You know, the Peeping Toms to the Psychos.
Yeah.
Thought of as So anyway, but just I thought it'd be fun to share what are, you know, in order to say that, you have to get on the same page about what defines a slasher.
Yeah, totally.
So I have the sort of bullet points of that. Thought you'd enjoy hearing.
Boy, will I.
First of all, it's number one. First of all, it should be noted that slasher villains are human beings or were human beings at some point.
Cool.
So you
fair.
Think like,
yeah.
Not a killer animal movie, not an alien attack movie. You know,
gotcha.
But it can be supernatural killer or human at some point.
Yes.
Right.
Got it.
Slasher killers choose to kill or are compelled to kill for the thrill or for revenge, but mostly because they're just filled with indiscriminate evil. Some are rational. Many are completely psychotic, but they're all monsters. They don't tend to be sympathetic or behave with empathy or logic. Importantly, their killings are inspired by drives that are easy for the audience to understand, such as greed, personal advancement, or to protect someone else. This is all to say slasher killers don't have realistically human motives, which is an argument for how I was tuning into the killer in this one.
I would say, okay.
And there's
realistic motives. Is what it says. They don't have realistic motives.
Right, but they
okay, so
they're just filled with indiscriminate evil.
Yeah.
Some are rational, but some are completely psychotic. They're all monsters.
Yeah, so yeah, I feel like the slasher
they don't behave with logic.
Right. And neither do like say serial killers. So I think that's the real world equivalent. Is the serial killer kind of, you know, you can take the serial killer reality and magnify it or play around with it, make it unnatural, supernatural, whatever. But at its core, I think that's kind of what the slasher really is coming from.
It's that that great unknown that keeps us compelled to watch the true crime documentaries.
Exactly.
Number three, slasher films have a body count, so you can't just have like a kill or two at the beginning or whatever. It's
mm-hmm.
like actual body count, you know, maybe four or more. Slasher films tend to have a quote final girl or a stand-in who is a paragon of virtue to balance out the pure evil of the antagonist.
Okay.
So, I mean, that stand-in can be multiple people, not just a male, you know, whatever.
Sure.
Slasher films, number five, slasher films are structured around graphic killings. Number six, final one, because the killings tend to happen over short periods in secret, we rarely follow police or detective investigations in true slasher films. Slasher movies are far more intimate than that. So think like Deep Red versus High Tension, you know, it's like,
yeah,
just your, or yeah, Halloween, because I haven't seen High Tension forever. For all I know, there was a detective story, but yeah, Halloween.
I don't think so.
It's intimate in this Jamie Lee versus Michael Myers, Laurie Strode versus Michael Myers
right.
feel.
The cops and the doctor exist, but they're really not
yeah.
a big...
Or the sort of that sort of like the relationship that forms outside of the main killer and our quote unquote final girl, which we get in this one. So
mostly one night or over the course of like a few nights.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a fun. Yes. Yeah.
Okay. That's cool.
Not there, but yeah, I feel like that's fair. So you see, with all that in mind and looking at all that came before it, Torso from 73.
That's wild. I feel like we've done older movies that we felt like were slashers, but now with that like way of defining it, I guess, yeah, I could see that they had slightly different aspects to them that didn't quite land at that stuff, all of those things mm-hmm. combined.
But it's I feel like that's a fair assessment done by Mr. Jim Vorel.
Yeah. I get behind that.
Yeah. Without further research on our own, he did it. I try. Someone did,
sure.
did the legwork there for us.
Take it for what it's worth.
So yeah, we brought up that question earlier too. I thought it was interesting. It's like when the English dub exists of a giallo that actually matches their lips
right.
or actually does match at all versus Italian. What is the truer preferred way to watch it? Because you can argue it's a giallo. It's like about getting the sort of the Italian dub and the Italian-ness and like the voiceover actors and part of the slog of it all in a way, or part of the spell of it all, part of the dream of it all. Or you could just say, hey, I speak English. I would have been able to follow it better. The lips matched better.
I think that... we don't need to be precious about bad dubbing, right? Like, and we don't need to be like, oh, well, it's not a true giallo experience unless we're watching the poorly dubbed.
I mean, they're
poorly
both poorly
synced.
Done. So it's just, we're talking more about Italian that doesn't match lips or English that does match lips.
Well, but no, I guess what I'm saying is there's a number of giallo films that are dubbed in English and like everybody was speaking whatever they were speaking on set, right? That's one of the things that mm-hmm. existed in a lot of the like Bava films. And so I think that there's a, probably I'm speculating, but I assume that there's a purist camp that is like, that's the true way to experience true giallo.
Even this one though, where the English matches the lips.
Well, that's what I'm saying, is that I don't think you need to be precious about it not matching, because that's what came before.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's fine if it may, and like English dubbed versions of Italian films has existed, you know, I don't think it's precious, what I'm saying. I think it's fine.
Which way would you watch
it? I would have preferred to have watched the English.
Me
dubbed.
Too. I think I
wish I'd known.
I think, yeah, me too. Which is, I mean, that's the only thing I've not worked is I wish when you're renting stuff online, it gives some kind of little disclaimer like these yeah. two options are available to you. This is this option. This is that option.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I watched it on Fandor. Have mm-hmm. you ever heard of that?
Yeah.
And like, I don't recall there being two options.
Yeah.
It's possible there were, and I just was, you know, I might have defaulted into being like, oh, well, I should watch the Italian.
I would
version.
Have been surprised if it was presented in such a way you would have even known to think or look.
Yeah, that's true. Well, yeah. The end. I don't know. I I think in general now, I mean, this is, I go back and forth because like any Asian film almost at all, I prefer to watch the subtitles because there's something about the way that they are speaking that I want to experience their actual emotional, like, what do you call that? Inflection or whatever. Even though I don't
these
necessarily
are completely different questions,
but I'm just making a point.
Yeah.
If we're talking about whether you want to watch a dubbed or a non-dubbed, there are nuances to the type of movie that my feeling falls under, right? Like with Asian films, I would rather watch the subtitled version and hear them actually doing it. With a giallo like that, like probably didn't have good sound to begin with and is going to be Italian dubbed anyway.
Right.
Whatever. I'll listen to an English dub of that.
You know, I feel like, yeah, of course, watch it with the whoever the original actors are, if it's their actual performance.
Right.
But this is not
this
that
doesn't
case.
It probably never had it. Right? Yeah.
We're speaking English on set.
That's right. Yeah, so whatever. All right, the end.
All right. We can wind down with some recommendations here.
Go ahead.
You know, I've had a few different things I was going between, but I feel like for you here, Tim, because I don't know if this will ever happen again, I wanted to recommend a Marvel film.
Okay.
The new Marvel film, Guardians of the Galaxy, Volume 3.
I'm going to see it tonight.
Great, man. I went all out, saw it in IMAX. I had no expectations aside from maybe I'll like it more than the first one. And I did. I liked it much, much, much more. I never saw the second one. God, I was hoping I could talk to you about it, but you haven't seen it yet. I just assumed you would have seen it.
Purely out of circumstance, I haven't been able to.
Well,
it came out like 4 days ago or something, five days ago.
I just in general, you know, like the fantasy adventure films, whether it be space or like, what do they call it? I don't know. Elf fantasy, whatever that would be.
Sure.
You know what I mean? Sword and sandals, sword sorcery.
So
is this down for a space adventure? And then what I think my memory of the first one, again, I haven't seen the second one, was that it like, I could never really engage with it just because kind of like Marvel as a whole, but they just like, there's just like nothing is serious. It's just everything is undercut at like, you know, any serious moment is always undercut. Like, I don't know. I
don't agree with that, but I understand why people feel that way.
It crosses a line where I just don't care about anything.
Yeah.
This one did not do that. The humor wasn't overdone. It just felt right for what I wanted. And that was another kind of thing with them too, or maybe one in the same what I'm talking about, kind of humor being overdone. But no, it was fun. They were fun characters, really cool, creative, like locations and set pieces that you actually felt they were there. Like, yeah,
great.
Incredible.
All right.
Man, I guess I can't talk to you about, but just some shots where I was like, wait, is that a puppet or is that a CG? That's exactly what I want right now. So
no, cool. I've seen some of the footage of like testing, you know, like test footage for CGI characters. And like even the test footage looks insanely good.
Yeah, fur's getting pretty good.
Yeah. Wow.
What do you recommend, great. Dad?
So I'm going to recommend Dead, not a movie, but a piece of art. My partner, Britt Westvere, who is a fine artist, will be installing a mural on the side of the West Hollywood City Hall.
Nice.
Yeah. She was chosen out of whoever people submitted for this thing, and to, you know, to be the next year's worth of the mural on the side of their building. So she will be, it's very cool. It's got sort of she's multidisciplinary. So she does like photography. She integrates photography, textile, What else? Digital art, all kind of meshed together. So in this case, it'll be kind of like a wheat paste, three panel posters of a digital mix of digital, created, original and archival photography.
So just tell us where to go see it. We'll see it.
So it'll be on the side of City Hall, which is in the West Hollywood City Hall, which is on Willoughby and Santa Monica Boulevard.
It'll be up soon.
So we're, yeah, installing next Monday and Tuesday.
Great. It'll be there on time of release then.
Yeah, yeah, it'll already be up. And I'm sure if obviously you're not in LA, you'll be able to see it.
No, come out to LA to see Brit's wall.
Please do. Yeah,
wall
that'd be amazing.
And so much else.
Yeah. But yeah, I'm excited. I'm really proud of her for, you know, obviously being the person they picked is great. That's, you know, they would be stupid not to pick her. But yeah, it's a cool thing to have, and it'll be up for a year or so.
That's great. I'll be excited to see it driving by Santa Monica,
that's right,
seeing City Hall
there.
Yeah,
it's very visible. So yeah.
All right. Well, then we have wound down with our recommendations. That's it here. We thank you for being here.
Yeah. Yeah. Thanks.
In closing, what I say, arrivederci. Buongiorno, something like that. Thanks for listening.
That's right. Yeah. Prego. We'll see you next time.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.